As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. It's our third episode of the season. I'm Gabriel Marcotti. We're going to do things a little bit differently because we're coming to you on a Tuesday, given that on Monday it's a holiday here in the United Kingdom. So rather than looking at the individual games in detail, which we normally do, we're going to start by looking at what the season has thrown up so far, our expectations for the six biggest clubs, plus the defending champions. And of course, joining me this week, once again, it's Julian Lawrence, James Scowcroft, coming to us from deepest, darkest east, somewhere between Norwich and wherever it is he lives, and Matt Dickinson coming to us just before the exciting Ryder Cup golf press conference, I suppose. Yes. Who loves golf here? Nobody. Okay, good. Good. Very good. Right, so the transfer window closes in a few hours. I'm going to put a clock on this, and we are quickly going to go through the six traditionally biggest spending teams, the big six. Yes, please feel free to accuse us of not paying enough attention to the smaller clubs, as well, of course, as the defending champions, simply because they are defending champions and because rumor has it they're spending zillions now just before the close of the transfer window. Let's start with you, Dicko. What do you make of what Leicester have done this summer, losing Conte and trying to strengthen the squad and being credible?
Well, losing Conte, obviously, big loss for starters, keeping Vardy, keeping Mahrez. I mean, to be honest, I suspect, given where we thought they were going to be a couple of months ago, that's just in credit. I think we thought, you know, the Vardy obviously had the chance to move to Arsenal, so they could be in a worse position. I think their dilemma is obviously that the fact that they've got the Champions League demand, they want a bigger squad to cope with that. But let's be real, that's going to be a one-off season. They're not going to finish in the top four this season. The Champions League is almost a, it's a one-off for them. If they're being sensible, they plan that the Champions League is a bit of a bonus. They give it a shot, but let's actually count ourselves as a mid-ranking Premier League club. And that sounds really, really miserablest of me, but I'm afraid that's the real world.
Scully, are you as negative about the way they've retooled as Dicko is?
I did start with a positive, by the way.
No. Yeah,
I mean, considering... I agree, they're in credit. I think if you look at the big three, Vardy, Conte and Mahrez, to lose just one of them, I think, was a bonus. I think there was a chance where they could have easily lost two. I don't think they'd have ever lost all three, so I think that's a plus. You know, it's hard for them to get players in because, you know, like I say, they're in the Champions League, they've got this, that and the other going on, but they can't quite attract the elite. So they're sort of having to, you know, in their scouting department, Steve Walsh has left to go to Everton. So it's been a lot of chaos this summer for them. But I think so far they've dealt with it very well.
Julian?
I obviously agree with Dicko and Scully there. I think if they do Slimani and Adrian Silva from Sporting, which again is they've been linked with, especially Slimani, for a long time, I do think they need someone up front. You know,
come on, another one. They have Vardy. He's having a party.
Ushua,
Okazaki, about Slimani.
No, okay. Vardy,
Musa.
No,
how many?
Musa, I think, would play wide more and give them something different. I think Slimani, for all the competition that coming up, I think Slimani would be a very good addition to the squad. I'm more keen on Adrian Silva, not just because he's half French. He's a very clever midfielder. I think, again, they could do with someone like him. Drinkwater has been great, but who knows if he can have the same season.
They got Nampolis too.
They got Mendy, and give him a bit of time. Because I saw some people being already a bit harsh on him.
Because he has a funny name.
Because he's got a funny name, and because it's hard to replace Conte. And again, Mendy being French, he has to be amazing, but he needs a bit of time as well. Coming from Nice, you know, and Monaco before that to Leicester, and playing the Champions League, everything is different. So they're in a good place if they can add one or two more.
Dicko, okay, you can give one word answers. Scully and Julian, please start thinking about this so that you don't and awe when I come to you. Your best case scenario for Leicester this season?
Oh, best case, I would say six. Absolute best case.
Worst case scenario?
I don't think I'll come below 12. Asked me, gun to my head to start the season, I think I'd have said about ninth.
All right, Scully.
Best case scenario, fifth. Worst case scenario, 10th.
Julien?
Go fifth as well. Best scenario and worst, 11.
Okay.
I wouldn't write them off, Gab. Don't write them off. I still think they're a good footballing team.
I'm not writing them off. Somebody else just did.
Well, I'm telling you personally not to write Leicester off.
By putting them in the top half, by the way, we're saying, I mean, there was, as my colleagues won't want reminding, most people had them tipped for relegation last season. So, you know, even talking about them as a top half team is, you know, shows how far they progressed.
This concludes our Leicester segment. Now it's on to Arsenal. Scully, we're going to start with you. So he signs Granit Xhaka way early. Then all the defenders seemingly get injured. Then he signs Skodran Mustafi. Okay, we saw him play in the World Cup. He comes from Valencia as a pedigree. And then he signs Lucas Perez, who everybody's hugely excited for. No, not really. It just seems like such an odd one that this is a guy who played on the wing much of his career, and then he sort of played as a striker last season, scored a ton of goals. But he is 27. He spent a big chunk of his career in places like Karpaty Lviv and PAOK, and Depor's not much better. What's your take?
Desperation. Just really strange goings on, isn't it, at Arsenal? Like I say, these clubs have known for a long, long time they need to strengthen, they need to, and why they do it at the last minute, I do not know. Time will tell. It's too early to judge any of these players. Half of them I haven't even heard of. So,
Dicko, I have seen a lot of Mustafi. I think he's a good player. Lucas, I don't know. I'm guessing Lucas is more of a... He's not really the striker they were looking for, perhaps, but maybe he's really just kind of the guy who's going to fill in for Danny Welbeck, since he's presumably not coming back until next year. Are you as negative as Scully about Arsenal?
I think it's hard not to be. I mean, as you say, Granit Xhaka, I mean, he's already looking like, you know, an absolute bona fide signing, so that's, you know, they're in credit on that. But I think there's just so much sense of Arsenal just going around in sort of ever-decreasing circles, isn't there? We're into a last year of a Wenger contract. You can almost hear that record being played around and around and again. He's got the chance. If he wants to stay on, certainly we wrote a month or two ago, you know, he could have sort of forced through a new contract whenever he wants. But, of course, it's against the backdrop of already after that Liverpool defeat. Oh, blimey. Oh, sorry, there's just a bin man next to me.
That's okay. He is fully dressed, right?
Those weren't all my bottles. It feels like, you know, this is the Groundhog Day club, isn't it? And here we are again. We're thinking, well, he's done one good signing, but then there's a couple of panics. He's not really gone out and just gone bang. Here is the world-class, absolute world-class players that are going to make Arsenal definitively better in two or three departments. I'll worry about up front. As you say, Welbeck can come back, but is Giroud going to have, again, one of those seasons where he's sort of, well, frustrating? Here we are again and again and again and again and again and again.
Okay, yeah, you know what? When people come out saying, like, there was a sense that Leicester were going to get relegated last season. Now y'all being so negative about Arsenal. Julian, help me. They finished second last season. Yeah. They added a very good defender. They added that defensive midfield everybody was banging on about that they needed. What's the problem?
I don't know. I'm quite excited. I want to see Lucas Perez, and maybe he's going to be a flop and a fraud, and you know how much I love the word fraud. And then we said, oh, but they should have gone for Vardy, because clearly Perez is not the first choice, right? Okay, we all know that Vardy was the number one on their list. They missed out. Lacazette was probably number two on the list. I think Higuain was probably somewhere on the list. They thought it was too much money, luck for Lacazette, whereas they were used by Vardy, probably, and a bit by Mahrez as well, to get new deals. But let's see what he does. You know, maybe he will be...
He's not going to start, though, is he?
I don't think he's going to start, but I think he could come in, replace Giroud for certain games to give Giroud a break, because I do think that when Giroud plays too much, you know, he struggles more, and we saw that last year when he didn't score for 3 months. And I think Mustafi is great, and I think if they're solid defensively, offensively, with Alexis and Ozil in the form they were, for example, on Saturday,
does anyone think, I mean, in the broader context, I mean, you say Arsenal came second last year, they came second to Leicester City, and they came second in the worst Premier League. You know, I mean, Man United, Man City, Chelsea, I mean, there were just weird things happened last year. Best case for Arsenal, I think, is third.
Worst case?
Worst case is sixth.
Scully?
Best case second, worst case six.
Julian?
Best case has to be first, and worst six as well.
What did you say, third?
First and six.
First and six, thank you. We're going to move across North London to Tottenham right now. Obviously, Janssen, Wanyama, maybe somebody else is coming in.
And Kudu from Marseille. You forget him.
Yeah, we're very excited for him, yeah. Well, Julian, why don't you start then and tell us, like, Jansen certainly divides opinion. Is this what Poch needed?
I'm not sure. I think he needed cover for Kane, that's for sure. I just didn't think they would go for someone like Jansen, who...
Who's not particularly athletic.
No, athletics. Doesn't seem to fit the style of play that Pochettino wants. Again, it's very early in the season. I don't want to be too negative about him. I'm just not very impressed so far. He missed some chances that even Yuga probably would have scored.
Thank you.
Even Scorry would have scored those. So I'm not so sure. I think the pace of Nkudu, who's a young player, people won't know about him, but I think, you know, he could have a bigger impact than Clinton Enge, which I know is not difficult.
The guy's injured. What's he supposed to do? He can't walk.
No, I mean, come on.
All right.
But yeah, I'm a bit disappointed, though. I thought they would do more business, considering they're back in the Champions League. I thought they would do their business earlier. And I still think that, you know, they could have strengthened a bit more.
Predictable negativity about Tottenham from Julian.
No way. I love Bosch.
If I was a Spurs fan, I'd be a little bit frustrated at the moment. You know, there's plenty of reasons for optimism with what Pochettino set up, what he's building. They've been one of the great sort of positive stories of last year, and there's a clear trajectory, and unlike Leicester, have got more chance of maintaining that trajectory. But it's given all that they've got going for them, and the good fortune in having a manager like that, you would just, if I was a Spurs fan, I'd just be wanting them to push on a bit harder.
Scully, you were a Jansen-type striker in your playing days. It doesn't make sense to play Harry Kane behind Jansen.
No, Harry Kane's proved himself, hasn't he? For me, Harry Kane is a fantastic, you know, number nine centre-forward. I think he's been a revelation the last two seasons. Play your players in their best positions. You know, he is adaptable. I think you could put him out wide. I think he could cut in off the left-hand side. He likes that little whip of his right foot, doesn't he? And he can link the play up, but Harry Kane is best as a number nine. I think we all remember that. I think it was a season, last season, the season before, where he absolutely ran John Terry ragged as a number nine. And that is him. You know, he's very skillful, but he can also...
So a lot of bench awaits you, Mr. Jansen, if Scully has his way. We need to we need to wrap this up. Best case, worst case scenario, Julian?
Second and six.
Dicko?
I would say third and six.
Good with Matt, third and six.
All right, a little bit less love there. And look, we've got a full 6 seconds, 5 seconds to spare. I think Pochettino signed a lot of players and tried to build a squad with the type of players he likes, not necessarily the best players, but players who fit what he wants to do. Moving on now, it's Manchester City, the big Pep Guardiola revolution. We'll be talking Joe Hart later. We don't necessarily need to get into him now. But first of all, Dicko, I'm going to start with you. How hugely excited are you about this?
What about City? I mean, he's hugely excited about
their moves in the summer.
About their moves? Well, I think we've seen already that, you know, he's. I think Guardiola said himself how delighted he's been with how things have sort of stitched together. You know, I think he thought it might take longer, that, you know, certainly bring in different players. Nolito looks like he's sort of just come in and just taken to it so quickly. The whole, you know, his system... I mean, I'm not saying anything sort of completely refined the way a perfectionist like him would want it. But, it, you know, they've started very, very brightly. I think that probably transfer-wise, and we're going to see this with Aguero if he's suspended, is do they have enough backup for him? Especially, obviously, I mean, I think Boney's been a dubious signing for them anyway, but up front, do they have sufficient backup?
And maybe, I mean, it's centre back too, right?
We've seen that Guardiola can play. I mean, he's pretty resourceful in playing without a striker. We've seen that enough times.
Well, so at centre back too, right? They're a little light, maybe behind Stones and Otamendi.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think there's,
despite
there's,
my there's, huge love for Kolarov,
he's resourceful enough as a coach that you can imagine him sort of getting by without a striker. But as you say, at centre half, maybe that's a weakness. But I think there's so much more that he will want to do. We're only just seeing the beginnings of it.
Scully, we still haven't seen Gundogan and Sané. Leroy Sané. And we might not see Sané because Sterling seems totally regenerated. I just want to ask you, we've spoken about City, but I want to get you on Sterling. When you have a manager, when you have a player who just plays so much better under a different boss, is that down to the boss or is it down to the player? Or shouldn't that be the first task of a manager, to make the players he has better?
Yeah, I think it's down to both. I think it's down to the player and I think it's down to the manager. It's man management skills, isn't it? And he's obviously got it. He's dealt with world-class players for a long time now. And he's obviously looked at Raheem Sterling. And there's a massive fine line to management, and it's when to put your arm around someone and when to give them a kick up the backside. I don't actually know what route Pep's gone down, but he's gone down the right one. He's probably got some insight information on the lad, probably on his background. I would imagine, looking, that it's an arm around the shoulder, and he's told him he's brilliant, he's this, that, and the other. And every player, you know...
Does that mean Pellegrini was telling him, look, you're rubbish?
Well, there was a lot of negativity around the lad, wasn't there, with Man City, with England. Right. And I think it just needed someone to sit him down, put his arm around and say, look, you're a young lad, you're a very, very good player, you're going to play for me every single week. You just build it up. I've seen it time and time and time with managers, management skills, and they are as important as coaching knowledge, tactical... Man management skills are so important.
Julian, I just want to check it back to actually the small section about what happened this weekend, because I was struck by something Guardiola said. He talked about how brilliant they played, all the chances they created. It's all true. And then he says, well, and West Ham scored the only way they were going to score with the ball into the box with a header simply because they're taller than we are. I kind of want to say, yeah, most teams in the Premier League are taller than you. Should that be a little concern?
And if you know how they're going to score, why didn't you try to prevent it? For example, you know, you put Clichy at left back and you know that Antonio probably play on his side, and you know he's much bigger and stronger than him physically.
Because if you put Kolarov there, Antonio's just going to run away from him.
Exactly, and you know that Kolarov has more chance to get the ball in the air against Antonio than Clichy, and then the ball comes to Antonio in the air, and then obviously he jumps over Clichy and scores the goal, and afterwards you said, well, I knew they were going to score like this. So it's interesting because he seems to have a game plan so perfectly prepared that he even knows how they're going to concede goals. But yeah, it's... If you knew, then you should have done something a bit different. However, I just love the guy. I think he's a genius.
We need to defer to his genius. Yeah. Best case, worst case?
First, obviously, and worst, fifth.
Scully.
Worst case scenario, they've come first. Best case scenario, they come sixth. Sorry, the other way around.
Yeah. not from a United perspective.
Yes, exactly.
Actually, your answer was accurate. Move on to Manchester United, one place to start with the man who writes for United We Stand and who tries to promote their podcast on a rival podcast or other podcasts. I'm joking. Actually, in all seriousness, do give United We Stand a listen. I'm told it's very good, even if you're not a United fan. How do you feel about this? Pogba, Ibrahimovic, Bailly, Mkhitaryan, Mourinho.
Well, going back to the Raheem Sterling effect, what he's also done is he's got the players there that haven't really sort of been there and thereabouts. He's got the best out. And Daley Blind so far has had an absolutely fantastic season. So not only has he come in and stamped his mark and he's got four excellent players in way before, you know, any deadline day rush or anything like that, he's also improved what he's got, which I think is a good sign of a manager. Bailly, the centre-half, looks an absolute revelation at the moment. Still undecided about Ibrahimovic. I'm not quite sure he can go the full distance.
Dicko?
Yeah, mostly with Scully on that stuff and agreeing with him on Zlatan. I mean, I wait when he scores 40 goals and they win the title, and I think they could well win the title, I'm sure.
He's on pace to score 38 goals, by the way.
But anyway, you know, but I just think, you know, there was I was really mixed when they signed him. Part of me, you know, I mean, it is Zlatan Ibrahimovic and he brings the whole, you know, charisma as well as his skills to the league. Equally, there was something that sort of throwing all that money at a guy of his age, and I don't know, there was some, I felt conflicted about whether I was thrilled to see him in the Premier League. This is Mourinho so far, the good Mourinho, you know, early into a reign, he had months to think about this job. He clearly had prepared it very, very carefully. As you said, Mkhitaryan is going to prove a very, very good signing. He came, you know, absolutely certain of how he wanted to set that team up. He became certain of a new centre-back signing. He's got Luke Shaw back. You know, they're just pieces are all fitting very neatly. You know, it's as if he's been manager for 6 months. And say that's the good sign of Mourinho. We'll see how long it lasts.
Yeah, actually, I agree with Dicko. I think Luke Shaw maybe hasn't been spoken about quite enough. I think if he obviously, again, operative word, if he stays fit, he can have a huge impact. Julian, you must be excited. You get to see Pogba close, and you get one more year of Zlatan.
Yeah, exactly. Zlatan, you know, PhD god, and
he's also a god to the people of Sweden.
Yes, indeed. No, I think like we said last week, I think or the week before, they got the right players, and I don't know how much credit Woody deserves or not, but they got the right player at the right time. Finally, after years of messing their recruitment, and it's just it looks on paper perfect. It looks like they've got everything to win this league, and Mourinho has been great. I was not so excited by the performance on Saturday. I thought they lacked.
It was raining.
I know, but come on.
It was a wet, windy afternoon,
and that's where you saw also Ibra on Saturday, and then that's where I in agreement with Corinne and Dicko is that. I don't know if he can last the whole season. He certainly have had, even if he scored already, he's had more games, despite the goals, where he was not at his best by far than where he was, which is maybe a good thing because today we'll be at his best and he'd be even better. It looks great for United. Let's see how long it lasts.
Gab, shall I tell you United's biggest problem? United's biggest problem, Mourinho's biggest problem is Wayne Rooney. What to do with Rooney? Because Rooney's not quite firing at the moment. He did unbelievably well for the winner, but Rooney could become a little bit of a problem.
Would you drop him?
Not at the moment, I wouldn't, but I think at some stage I can't see him. He just seems burnt out to me, and he has done for a while.
Poor Wazza, come on. Dicko, best case, worst case?
Best case, definitely first. I'd say, worst case, fourth.
Julian?
One and fourth as well.
And Scully?
One and three.
Right, let's move on to Liverpool, who won it five times, of course, which is what, 2.5 times? Or no, sorry, it's 40% more than what than the number of times United have won it, right? Oh, no, I'm sorry. Yes, that's right. Just pointing that out there, Scully, just to get you fired up. So tell me about Klopp.
We're talking about a transfer window, aren't we? What?
Will it be a Klopp-tastic season?
I just think it's typical. I think Liverpool against the top teams are a real threat, a real force. I actually think Klopp's a very good manager. Again, going back to man management skills, I think he's a motivator. I think he gets players up. It's the games against the smaller teams that have been Liverpool's Achilles heel, and it still looks the same. The Burnley defeat just sums it up.
Dicko, do you like their transfers? Because, I think a lot of people were like, wait, so who the hell is Ragnar Klavan? And Karius signed something you go to the dentist for. And, you put these things together, and yet he seems high on them.
With those signings, I'm gonna have to wait and see. I don't think, as you say, you would back Klopp's wisdom. I'm sure Liverpool fans are, but I think I can't sort of rubber stamp them because I just don't know enough and haven't seen them play enough in this league. I think the fact that they're not in Europe is probably as big a factor for Liverpool as anything. Which, given the way Klopp sets up his teams and what he demands from his teams, is could be a boon for them. I think that without that, I think he's got more chance to sort of stamp his style on it, to spend more time coaching them, and I think that could be key, especially if he's trying to assimilate players we don't know a lot about at the moment.
Julian, do we potentially have a Sturridge issue as well?
Oh, it's not potentially. It's we do have a Sturridge issue, and you could see the face he was pulling on Saturday during the game, where you could see that he was not going to come off until the late stage of the game. He was not happy. I don't think Klopp is happy. I agree with Klopp. Why
do we know what the actual problem is? He's just not happy because he's not playing.
Well, he thinks he should play centrally and not wide.
Well, sorry. Is there anybody in this room who does not think, or in this podcast, who thinks that Daniel Sturridge is better wide than he is central? Nobody? I didn't think so. So it's only Klopp.
No, but the idea for Klopp is that players should be able to play in different positions. It's not because you'll start initially on the right-hand side or the left-hand side that you can't move centrally and switch with Firmino, switch with Coutinho, switch with Mane. It doesn't mean that you have to stay along that touchline for the whole 90 minutes. So what's the problem? Even if they start three up front, Coutinho, Firmino, Sturridge, it doesn't mean that Sturridge can't play chunks of 15, 20 minutes in the centre and then move again wide and then come back centrally and then move again wide. What's that? Flexibility is all about football nowadays.
Well, no? let's remember that, for example, one of Wayne Rooney's best seasons in terms of the medals he won was effectively doing a load of wide running for Cristiano Ronaldo. I know Ronaldo's a special player, but that was the role that he was asked to do. He was asked to do a lot of donkey work, and he did it, and he got on with it because Ferguson persuaded him it was worth his while. Now, I think the issue with Sturridge is less about Sturridge the footballer, is what's in Sturridge's head. Klopp needs him. Klopp needs him to do a role, and in some ways, I think, he's challenging him to say, look, you think you're a genius, but you know what? I'm going to challenge you to show that you're a team player. And I think this is, less about whether Sturridge is better here or better there. Of course he's better as a number nine. But there are times when a manager wants...
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on. Settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books. Contacts. Calendar. Double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
To say, look, I don't care how good you're at number nine, I need you to do this job. And as I say, Wayne Rooney did that job very diligently for Man United. Did he like it? I'm sure he didn't. This is an issue of sort of attitude and managerial control.
I'd suggest maybe also the difference, though, with Rooney that season is it's one thing if you're asking Rooney to go play wide because the greatest goal scorer in the history of modern football will be playing down the middle with Cristiano Ronaldo. And if it's not him, you'll have Berbatov and whatever. Now you're asking him to go play wide so that freaking Roberto Firmino, who's not even a center forward, can run through the middle. I mean, Scorey, that's got to be a bit of annoying, right? You were a center forward.
Yeah, but I think Matt's right. You have to be adaptable in this day and age. You know, the 4-3-3, it just looks like a player that's not happy. And like again, we go back to Raheem Sterling. It needs a Klopp to think, right, how can I get the best out of you? How can I convince you that you are such a big part? Because when he is fit and when he's firing Daniel Sturridge, he's a top player in my opinion.
I need a quick best case, worst case. Julian?
Best case, second. No, first. No, Europe to the first. And worst, seven.
Dicko?
Best case, third. Worst case, seventh.
And Scully?
Best case, second. Worst case, seventh.
All right, well, seventh would be higher than what they finished last year. Yep. So surely that I guess you all see an improvement in Liverpool. Let's talk Chelsea. New manager Antonio Conte. Thus far, just the two signings, Michy Batshuayi and N'Golo Kanté. There could be more signings. So Tony Evans used to be on this podcast. He referred to an unnamed friend of his who said that Conte was just a less intelligent Mourinho. Dicko?
I think that's a bit rude, but I think one thing that is sort of quite interesting about seeing Chelsea compared to City and United is, you know, how much change there is at City, and we've already seen it, how much more there will be. You know, United are being sort of, you know, turned into a Mourinho team very quickly, and we all know what that means, and there'll be, you know, lots of wins and lots of, you know, conflict. I think the Chelsea, what's almost most interesting is how they're trying to sort of not change very much at all. I mean, I think there's a 4-2-3-1. There's you see, you know, Willian at the weekend buzzing around, sticking a goal, doing what he does. You saw Hazard coming in off the left wing, coming in. You saw, you know, we've seen Costa throwing his weight around. I mean, look, if you're Conte and you come in, you're going to build on the strengths that you find. But it's almost as if Chelsea are just trying to sort of go back to some kind of, you know, stability with a Conte-like intensity, which is what they were known for under the best Mourinho days as well. It's almost as if Chelsea, their sort of revolution under their new manager is almost a sort of retro revolution compared to what's happening at the other big clubs.
Julian, he doesn't really want to play 4-2-3-1. I think we all know that. Mm-hmm. He wants to play 4-2-4. Is this team complete?
No, and I think.
And how bad would it be if they don't get the defenders that maybe they need?
Yeah, I think he knows they need a defender. I think they've tried and they're going to keep trying. I think a left back, probably someone like Marcos Alonso, something like that, and in midfield as well. The name of Brozovic, for example, has been mentioned.
The Bras,
and you and I, Gab, a big fan of him. But yeah, they need more. But Conte knows that. You know, he's not stupid. But whoever said that he was a Mourinho but less clever, I don't agree with you.
Mourinho's very clever. So yeah. You're less clever than Mourinho, you can still be very
clever, I guess. But I think Conte knows that they still need people, and their performances, despite the three wins, haven't been the greatest. At least, you know, on the whole 90 minutes or even 60 minutes, they've had good patches. They've also have difficult halves against Watford, for example. But you could see the progress, you could see the improvement, you could see what he's trying to do already. And like Dicko said, you could see some players being, you know, like almost new players. So I think that's good. They're not far away. Just a couple of signings, I think, and an improvement for being really, really, really in contention for the title.
Scully, Diego Costa is still there. Conte's hinted at wanting to play 4-2-4. I don't know if that'll ever happen. Is it odd to you?
Odd in a sense of?
Odd in the sense that you're keeping this guy who's, you know, who could have been banned twice already this season. Odd in the fact that Conte wants to play a system which very few people have successfully played since Brazil did it and to win the World Cup in 1970. And all these things that he's trying to affect a lot of change rather than just kind of coasting and saying, let me just get in the top four.
And I think this is something that Pep's got to be careful of as well, that, you know, the Premier League is such a strong league now that even teams at the bottom can come and set up and they can catch you on the counter-attack. So if you're going to play four up front, you're going to leave an unbelievable amount of space down the sides and, you know, players to exploit that, really. I think with Costa, I think he sort of represents the manager, doesn't he, with his passion and his energy on the side. And I think Costa's one of these that, you know, will have good spells and then will get banned for three games. It'd be, you know, he's a sort of the hero or the villain, isn't he? And whilst he's a hero, people, you know, especially Chelsea people, will run with it.
Right. About the 4-2-4, it actually can be a very defensive formation if done properly. Because one of the amazing things, if you ever see it play when it works, you'll basically see the opposing fullbacks and defenders just sit all the time, and there really is no space in the flanks because they're too scared to come forward.
You can create overloads down the size gap, can't you?
With who?
Players with 4-3-3. So if you can get a 2v1, so if you switch the ball very quickly, and you can get a wide player and a fullback getting the other side of the you're going to create a 2v1 at the sides.
That's great. So you have your 2v1 on the sides. When you give the ball away, I boot the ball up the pitch.
No, no,
it's a 4-on-3.
You're talking about the next phase now. I'm talking about you can create 2v1s.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I guess it depends on the personnel and the execution. Julian, best case, worst case?
Best case first, obviously, and worst case fifth.
Dicko?
Yeah, I'd agree. I don't think they'll win it, but they could be in the mix. I think they'll probably come about third.
Okay, you...
So first and third.
No, I'll tell you. I mean, well, they could come fifth, but I think they'll come about third.
Scully?
I think best case scenario is probably second if one of the Manchester clubs blows up. Worst case scenario, fifth.
No Europe. Don't forget, no Europe as well.
I know.
Yeah,
it's a big thing. You can't underestimate how big it is not to play in Europe.
It's international week again, just what we need to go and kill whatever momentum might exist at the start of the season. England play Slovakia, they play some other friendly too, I think, about, I don't even know against who, but I don't really care. I want to talk Sam Allardyce, and it's interesting because we've discussed already on this podcast whether, you know, he was the right choice given the circumstances. It seems that everybody got into this huge debate about Marcus Rashford very, very quickly. Dicko, would we have been having this debate about Rashford if he hadn't scored the winner at the weekend?
It certainly wouldn't have been as sort of pertinent a debate, would it? I mean, but I guess it just sort of shifted it on, you know, higher up the agenda. I mean, I think in an ideal world, England have got enough players that, you know, you don't need to call on a teenager who's sort of on the fringes of his first team, you know, and for a one-off game, a one-off qualifier, when you've got Burridge, Vardy and Kane, you probably don't need him. And having said that, we'll be 0-0 against Slovakia. And
are you negative, Nellies? Come on!
Desperate to throw on strikers. But no, I can see, you know, in an ideal scenario, you don't have him. Because you do say, look, he's still a work in development. He's an exciting player, and he's clearly of England senior caliber. There's no doubt about that. I'm not saying he must be in the under 21s, but I can see an argument where you think, look, if he's going to get game time in the under 21s, then that makes more sense than him twiddling his thumbs in Slovakia and not getting on the pitch at all.
Yeah, Scully, I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, if he's not, I mean, you've worked with young players. If he's not going to get into the first 11 or he's not going to start for Manchester United, what's the point of also bringing him along to sit on the bench for England? Isn't it better that he'd be with the under 21s?
Do you not think the experience of going with the England senior team will keep him in the mix?
Yeah,
you said he needs game time, he needs
fitness
work.
I remember when Theo Walcott went to the World Cup in 2006, and it did wonders for his career, right?
Well, he wasn't good enough. You know, Rashford's proved himself. He's proved himself last year.
He's been to the Euros. Why does he need to go to Slovakia?
You've got to make a big decision and drop someone and upset them, and it's all, I better not do that, so I'll just leave young Rashford out because he's the easy one. You know, the boy is a real, real talent. Mourinho's got the same problem now because Rashford can give something different to Rooney and Ibrahimovic, but to drop one of those two is going to be a massive, massive call. But at some stage, you'll have to do it because this lad is a real, real talent, and I think it's a massive backstep for England. Where's he going to go and play the Community Western Cultures United Stadium now? You know, well done, England.
He's 18 years old.
I don't care how old is he. You know, even when he came on against Iceland for the last 15 minutes, he sort of almost embarrassed Roy Hodgson on how good and what he could offer. I just think he can offer something that none of the other England players can do. And if I was Sam Allardyce, I think he's missed a big trick with that.
I think y'all should stop freaking out over Rashford. Let him develop at his own pace. Keep the pressure off him. Don't destroy him like you've done with other teenagers.
He's already developed. Play the lad.
That was fantastic. It did wonders for Walcott.
Theo Walcott got with Marcus Rashford 12 years ago.
You always do this. You always do that. The guy's 18 years old. I think he started some like 17 games as a professional in his entire career, right? If Jose Mourinho thinks that for the time being, he's not an everyday starter with his club, then...
That's something you have to accept. If he's not playing regularly for his club, why not get him regular playing time with a set of teammates, by the way, who are more likely to be his teammates throughout his career as the under-21 squad develops? Why does he have to go to England, go with the England team and go and sit on the bench? I just don't understand that.
It's just a good experience for him. He was part of the squad. You also have
a squad. Well, that was a fantastic squad. Experience at the Euros, wasn't
about,
it?
That's not about that. It's about, you know, you've built a squad, or they've built a squad, and I think there's the idea of that continuity with the squad, which I think is important. And Deschamps, for example, with France, talks a lot about that. Even if your players is not in this best form, but yeah, if it's part of the squad,
the oracle of football.
No, yeah. But it's just, you know, it's just a point of view, and I agree with him. And I think there's, what's wrong with Rashford joining in the squads, training every day with Rooney, with Kane, with Sturridge, with Vardy? What's wrong with that? That will help his development as well. But there's nothing wrong with that. Even if he doesn't play in Slovakia and in a friendly, or even if he just plays 10 minutes or 5 minutes.
None of those people you mentioned, other than Sturridge, are likely to be in the England squad when he becomes a starter, by the way.
Yeah, but that's not a problem. Right. I think it's more for the experience to be there. That's right. What happened at the Euros as well.
But moving on to somebody more interesting than Rashford, the England keeper, Joe Hart, who's also a big man, almost as big as Big Sam, in fact. Obviously, we talked before about his situation at City. At this stage, I don't know, because it's not done yet, whether he's going to Everton or Sunderland or Torino. There were certainly reports that he could be going abroad. So I want to talk to you, Dicko, about the principle of Joe Hart agreeing to leave the Premier League to go and get playing time and choosing perhaps to do so abroad, where he's gonna be in a totally different setting. I know you know him a little bit. I mean, is he the kind of guy who's prepared for this?
But I am a bit surprised, to be honest. I mean, I think it's partly a reflection of the sort of caliber of the other moves he's getting, and maybe just feeling like, you know, it looks and it feels like a real step down to go to a Sunderland and feel like you're in a relegation fight. I mean, I think there's probably a bit of ego involved in that. He has got an ego. There's no two ways about it. And I am surprised, just because I wouldn't necessarily see him as the type to rush abroad. I didn't see him as that adventurous, to be totally blunt.
But this is a positive, right? I mean, when people often complain about England players being coddled and so on, this is a guy who's challenging himself.
It's a positive. He does prove himself open-minded. I mean, I've dealt with various players who moved abroad, and we've seen all extremes. I was out in, spent a lot of time in Madrid with Steve McManaman, who, you know, was just great and played in two Champions League finals and embraced everything about the move. And I dealt a lot with Michael Owen, who had been there 5 minutes and was already desperate to get home. So, you know, it's very much, he did fine out there, Michael. He scored some goals, but, you know, he was hankering after coming home before he'd even unpacked his bags. So I think I'd be fascinated to know which, if he does go to Torino, which approach Joe Hart takes. It's possible to succeed at your football if you still sit in the hotel room and eat fish fingers, but you'd like to think that guys who go abroad would go for the whole package.
I don't know. You know Joe Hart better than I do. I'm surprised that.
But I am surprised if he goes for it.
No. I'm saying I didn't realize he was that sort of character. Moving on to quick hits. A reminder of the rules for those who haven't been on the podcast in a while, Matt Dickinson. Your answer must last 20 seconds. If you go over 20 seconds, you will hear an initial sound effect. And then at 25 seconds, you will hear another initial sound effect. And after that, I will start shouting very close to the microphone, and it's going to get all crackly and unpleasant. Hull City started very well despite their depleted squad, and suddenly it looks as if Mike Phelan might stick around, even when the new owners come in, which I'm told will be a couple weeks, no more than that. They're even making signings if, as appears likely, Will Keane, former United youth product, and Jeff Hendrick are on their way in. Jeff Hendrick, of course, from Derby, Republic of Ireland International. Scoey, do you like these signings as much as I do?
I think they're interesting. I think Will Keane's an interesting one. He would have, regarding Rashford, if Will Keane wouldn't have damaged his cruciate knee ligament in an FA Cup tie against Shrewsbury last year, Marcus Rashford, nobody probably would have heard of him.
He'd be playing for
Will
Hull.
Will Keane was the next best player. So good luck to him. He needs a home, Will Keane. Jeff Hendricks is a solid midfield player. So two okay signings.
Everton, we're told, now have their very own billionaire owner, Farhad Moshiri, although there's all these wonderful stories about him, like supporting other clubs and owning other clubs. That's a whole other story. But Dicko, their transfer activity feels a little bit flat to me. Can you tell me why I should be optimistic about Mr. Moshiri?
Well, that's a good question. I've got some family who are Everton fans, and they're endlessly asking questions which, sadly, I can't always answer about just what is going on with the ownership, the money behind that club. These are questions that have been going back a decade about who's putting money in, whose money it is, who's actually controlling the purse strings. And I think Everton have got a long, 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 long way to go to answer those questions.
Southampton break their transfer record by signing somebody named Sofiane Boufal from Lille. Julian, your thoughts?
I'm so excited, Southampton fans and every fans in the Premier League. The guy is the king of skills. He's Riyad Mahrez, but right-footed if you want. He's great, he's young. There's still a lot of room for improvement. His decision-making is not always the greatest. But if you've been watching a bit of Ligue 1, I hope you have, he was on fire last year before getting a bit of an injury at the end. But great, great, great talent. Well done, Southampton.
Is he the best player named Sofiane in the Premier League?
For sure. Who is the other one?
I'll send Figuli around your house to sort you out. Oof. I guess we'll find out soon if Sergio Aguero will be banned for that wayward elbow on Winston Reid. In fact, news might already be out by the time you listen to this podcast. But Scoey, I'd imagine you've been in that situation before. Any sympathy? Would you ban him?
I would ban him, yes. 3 games, definitely.
So that he could miss the Manchester Derby, right?
He will miss the Manchester Derby, which will be a massive blow for Man City. I think it's tomorrow the FA have to make a decision. It's frustration, isn't it? He's obviously a bit frustrated, and he's lashed out at Winston Reid. You can't do these things. There's cameras on cameras these days, so not good.
Have you ever done that? Have you ever delivered a dirty elbow to a dirty defender?
50 times worse than that as well. And it was
Martin
horrific, and I regret it to this day.
Who was it?
It was against a player called Greg Harrison that played for Middlesbrough and played for Ipswich. And he was pulling my shirt. I was having a horrendous game. George Burley was getting on my back, and I've literally just swung out. And unfortunately, he was about 4 inches smaller than me, and it looks like I've gone to literally punch him in the face. And it looked horrific on TV, and it's something I even apologised to the lad 6 months later. And Nigel Pearson, who was the captain at the time, grabbed me by the scruff of the neck in the tunnel and said, "Don't ever do that again." Heat at the moment. But Aguero, 3 games. See you later.
West Ham supporters are pretty annoyed, and there were some funny internet rants doing the rounds after their elimination from the Europa League at the hands of Astra Gyurgyu. Dicko, have they just been unlucky? Is Simone Zaza, he of the wonderful penalty at the Euros, really the guy to energise the Olympic, London Stadium?
I was looking at his record. I'm sure, Gab, you know infinite detail on it. It's not that impressive, actually, is it? He's had a pretty mixed career, and he moved around a lot of places. Was it only one goal for Italy in a reasonable amount of appearances? So I think his record does not fill me with great hope for them.
Well, he's not really a prolific goal scorer. I mean, he's more of a busy type.
Busy type. But, I mean, yeah, but you know, the way he's been shoved around a lot of places, never really settled. This idea of being out of Europe, we've decided, is a good thing. So you could argue, with previous clubs, so you could argue, despite the fact they're going to lose money, that that's not the worst thing that's ever happened to their league places.
Arsene Wenger says plenty more money will be spent between now and the end of the transfer window on a Wednesday night. Now, not presumably, I think he's talking in generalities, Julian, not by him.
Yeah.
Julian, is he right? It's funny because we all hear about, the massive money in the Premier League, 70% more in TV ranks. I can assure you transfer spending has not gone up 70% and won't do by the time it shuts. And it seems to me it's kind of hard to put a massive deal together in 48 hours.
It is hard, but you can if you throw a lot of money and you know, if wages and transfer fees are above the asking price, if you want. So I do think more business is going to be done. A lot of clubs are looking for more players, so they will spend more. It's interesting, though, to see that when we all expected them to buy and buy and buy and spend and spend and spend, they actually haven't been that much spending, which is maybe something that we can look at. Gab, one for you. Oh, God, I can't believe I'm reading this. PSG played Monaco over the weekend, and I know you were excited to see Unai Emery's new look PSG against a serious opponent. How did he go?
Now, Julian, you don't really follow PSG very, very closely. So I'm going to bring in a special correspondent, Agent James Scowcroft, who was actually at this game in the south of France. Scow, you were there because I believe you were visiting Philip Green, right?
I was indeed.
You were staying at Philip Green's house?
On his yacht.
Okay, so from what I saw, PSG were pretty bad, and I think that they're moving from being Ibra dependent to nothing. I think some of these guys have serious personality issues. Maybe they all deferred to Ibrahimovic last year, and now that they're asked to step up, it's not working. Is that how you saw it?
Just seemed a team that was very, very talented. You can see the talent. You know, Di Maria at times was unplayable. Rabiot in midfield, extremely good. But like I say, they just weren't knitted together. Cavani missed chance after chance up front. The body language of the team wasn't great. And Monaco were just far superior, really. So this big PSG global bandwagon has, I think, hit the buffers a little bit, really. And I fear for them in the Champions League if they play the way they did on Sunday night.
They lost 3-1. I don't fear for them because, frankly, I couldn't care less if they do badly. In fact, I might even enjoy it. I'll give somebody else a go. But
that's so mean.
Well, you've had your time, Julian. Hey, Scotty, is this a situation that, I mean, is that Unai Emery came in, of course, he's somebody who's almost like enjoying a second life because he made his name at Almeria and at Valencia, did really, really well. Then he went to Russia and had all sorts of problems. I think it was it Spartak Moscow?
Yeah.
Then he comes back and all of a sudden he's winning again. Does this look to you like a team with a very good manager?
No, because the team looked unmotivated, but the manager at the side was very animated at the time. So it just looked like someone who didn't have control of his players. For example, he put Ben Arfa on with 20 minutes ago, and Ben Arfa just didn't even move a muscle. So there's obviously the players don't have much fear of their manager, really. So I don't know too much about it. Julian would know more than me, but it seemed a team with big problems.
It's a process. It's a new manager. It's a process. The formation has changed. The players have changed. Obviously, losing Ibra, you will always going to need time to adapt for life without Ibra. And
shall I tell you a funny story about Ibrahimovic? Right?
Yes. Funny story from Skowy.
Come out the stadium and I see these kids outside a restaurant in there, and I thought, wow, you know, it's obviously someone famous here. Ibrahimovic was in the restaurant. So he didn't go to the game. This was 200 metres from the stadium, but these old teammates, I don't know what's happened, but he's had a meal whilst the game's going on, whilst his old team are playing in the stadium 100 yards away.
How do you know he wasn't in the game?
Because he just finished his meal, and I went in 10 minutes after the game.
Maybe he eats really, really fast.
No,
he didn't. Or maybe he left before the end.
He was cool.
Obviously, Mino Raiola, who
lives in Monaco.
I'll send you a picture on Twitter, Gab, me of Ibra.
Oh, you took a picture with him?
Yeah, that's amazing.
Is he bigger than you?
He is bigger than me, yeah. He's taller than me as well, which was
disappointing.
I'm fascinated by this. Did you tell him who you were, or did he think you were just some random fan?
No, he had all security everywhere. He said, no pictures. And I said, Ibra, I'm a Manchester United fan. He said, for you, one picture. So he gave me one picture.
Amazing.
You said that? You didn't say, Ibra, I'm a former Premier League striker who played...
I scored more goals than you in the Premier League.
A lot more than you did in the Premier League.
Listen, we don't all live in this bubble that you do, where we have blue ticks after a name on Twitter.
Oh. Just give Unai Emery some time, please.
All right, we'll be sure to do that. I think, by the way, that I think you've scored, 20 times as many goals as Ibrahimovic has in the Premier League?
I wouldn't swap my career for anyone, but if I could swap it with Ibrahimovic, I would possibly consider it.
There you go. And you'd be a black belt in Taekwondo as well, which I'm pretty sure you're not.
And I'd be wealthy. I'd be wealthier than what I am now.
A lot wealthier. Right, that's all we've got time for today. Many, many, many thanks to my guests today, the excellent Julian Lawrence, the fantastic globe-trotting James Scowcroft, and Matt Dickinson, who spent so much time in Brazil and in the Gulf, that Dicko, come back. Football really misses you. Remember, it's just £12 for a 12-week trial. Just search The Times online. And also, please press the subscribe button on wherever you choose to download your podcast from. And then you can hear us every single week without putting in too much effort. And we're going to be back in 6 days' time. Bye-bye.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.